Welcome everyone to Creating a Family, talk about infertility. Do us a favor and let your friends know about this podcast. Most people find out about podcasting in general and about this specific podcast from their friends. So do us a favor. If you've got somebody in your life who either you want to educate about infertility or they are also in their own infertility struggle or journey, please let them know about this podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about coping with the stress of infertility with Joey Miller. She is a licensed clinical social worker with over 18 years of experience in women's reproductive health. She is in private practice in Chicago at Wellsprings Health Associates, and her first book on the unique challenges of subsequent pregnancy after a loss is targeted for release in spring 2020. We will also be talking with Betty Galen. She is a licensed clinical social worker working in the field of reproductive medicine since 2005. She is licensed in both New Jersey and Florida, having worked for Reproductive Medicine Associates of New Jersey for 11 years before relocating to South Florida, where she continues in her private practice. Welcome, Betty and Joey, to Creating a Family. We are so happy to have you here.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Thank you. It's wonderful to join.
Well, you know, I think that for a lot of our audience, quite frankly, this next question they're going to roll their eyes at. But for those, in case there are some fortunate few who are listening who have never experienced infertility, let's start by saying, you know, why is infertility so stressful? I mean, you know, you're not getting pregnant, but, you know, why is that in particular so stressful? Joey, you want to start with that one?
Sure. I would be happy to. I think that the awareness has gradually been increasing that infertility is a medical issue and a medical challenge. But I think what is not quite as obvious is that it's also very significantly a mental health challenge that women and couples oftentimes are going through this and in silence because they greatly desire privacy and because they don't necessarily know what the outcome of this journey will look like. So there's oftentimes depression, anxiety, and also secrecy layered on top of that, sometimes by choice, but that can also isolate women and couples from their social support networks.
You know, you're right. And the secrecy and the privacy, I think, is somewhat tied into the fact that it's all connected to sex. I mean, you know, and it's, So, I don't know how, and one would think with a bunch of adults that we would not still be connected. I mean, not still be concerned about that, but it is a private matter and not usually one that you discuss. So,
and one that oftentimes is a very intimate process, but oftentimes not, that when a couple is not able to have unprotected sex very straightforwardly or spontaneously and conceive, and oftentimes a reproductive endocrinologist or a whole team of providers then becomes included, that the intimacy kind of goes out the window. And so oftentimes women and couples will scramble to hold on to that sense of intimacy and privacy as they go through this.
Or give up on intimacy and give up on the fact that sex is supposed to be an enjoyable aspect of life. And then that also adds to the stress, particularly if that has been a way that couples have been able to come together and literally and figuratively in the past, you know, that it makes it, that's, it's a huge loss. I'm glad you actually mentioned that. That's not one that I had thought of.
On so many different levels, a loss in terms of identity, in terms of spontaneity, in terms of control, in terms of, you know, outcome on so many different levels, it's a loss.
Yeah, it is. And you know, in the, there's so many potential griefs that we are, or losses that we are anticipating or having to process. Betty, one of which is the whole concept of, I mean, the whole reason we're trying to get pregnant is because we want to be a parent.
Right.
So let's talk some about the loss associated with that.
Well, you know, I think women particularly were socialized when we're really young to think about being mommies, because we get baby dolls and we play house and we do that, which is a little bit different than boys, right? They're shooting up and doing all kinds of other things, but it is changing a little bit. But still, we are, you know, even women who don't want to, you know, think about having children, that happens a lot later. We don't grow up saying, I'm not going to have a baby, unless there's a physical something, we're not able-bodied or something like that. But I think that's really difficult, you know, that there's an expectation. It's a transition from a coupling to familying. So I think it's really hard for people to think about not having a child the way everybody else does.
Well, and yes, and then the growing fear that either you won't be able to have a child, and or you won't have a genetic connection to your child, and that comes with its own loss.
Right.
You know, the you know, we always imagine the perfect combination of our partner and ourself, you know, and not the. Of course, we never really imagine the imperfect combination where they get, you know, your big feet and his big nose. But we always imagine that it's going to be just the perfect flourishing of who we are as a couple, too. And there's that loss.
Yeah. And it's the natural way, right? That you get married, you know, you date, you get married, you have a baby, and that is changing, you know, now we have, we date, we have babies, and then we get married. So, but it's really kind of the natural order of things. And when all your friends are in that position and they're succeeding and you're not, it's really hard, you know, and these, and many, many women, you know, have never not succeeded at anything that they've done.
You know, I'm so glad you mentioned the sense of failure. Joey, can you talk further about that? Because that's something that's seldom discussed, but there's an underlying current of I am failing, my body is failing, you know, and like Betty said, and I'm used to succeeding, you know, because you know, I'm, you know, if I put my, you know, my heart, you know, pull myself up by the bootstraps, work hard, do all the right things, I could succeed, and yet I can't. Yeah.
And we're socialized to believe that, and we buy into that thinking that if we work hard enough, we can have anything that we want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the classic American dream. And for many women, it's not for a lack of trying that many women who struggle with infertility are trying for weeks and months and sometimes years in pursuit of greatly desired parenthood and or pregnancy, whether that includes loss or that doesn't even get to the point of a conception, the loss tally continues to grow. And so, yes, you're correct that women do feel that their bodies have failed, oftentimes that the medical system has failed them. We put a lot of trust in medical providers thinking, if I present to a fertility clinic, if I work with a team of providers, it's not always a guarantee. And so in many different ways, the sense of a woman's identity, and you mentioned before, from a cultural standpoint, in many ways, motherhood defines women, whether or not the individual buys into that or not. And so on so many different levels, feeling I have failed as a woman, I have failed as a partner, I have failed as a daughter to provide my own parents with a greatly desired and anticipated baby. And I think this idea of failure, you know, it ties into even the words that we use when we're expecting, or I'm sorry, when we're pregnant, I'm expecting. Yes, I'm expecting I can have unprotected sex with a partner. I'm expecting that 9 months later, happily ever after. And infertility goes counter to all of that.
Yeah, and it challenges your dreams and your life expectations. So let's talk some about, I was glad you mentioned the fact that it challenges your expectations, but it also challenges your identity as a woman or as a man. Betty, let's, and I often feel that the men have it harder, that masculinity in some ways is more tied, although I guess femininity is equally tied to motherhood. So maybe I'm wrong there. Do you think it's harder or equally as hard for men and women from their sense of who they are as a man or a woman?
I think it's equal. I think women talk about it more than men talk about it.
That's fair.
And I think the bottom line question that a lot of people say is, why me? And of course, there's no answer to that. Why me? You know, there may be a medical question, but then you go into all the psychological, whatever core values they have about themselves. Why me? Can all bring up, you know, it all comes up when we're going through fertility. So we have a lot of critics that come up. And I think that, you know, men don't have as many places to go to talk about it. I found one support group online for men, and women have lots of places where they can go. And men are just, and they don't talk to their friends, and they're coping in different ways. You know, men avoid, women talk.
And I think you're absolutely right on the lack of talking from men's standpoint. You know, another loss that for some women is that even when there are other options for becoming a parent through adoption or through surrogacy, there is still the loss of pregnancy and experiencing that. And Joey, I think that that comes as a surprise to a lot of women that that actually is important to them. I mean, there's not a lot of people who say, gosh, I just really can't wait to go through labor. And yet being able to share in the communal sharing of labor stories, you know, when a group of new moms get together, all of that is a loss as well. Maybe, you know, just even the physical aspects.
Yes, I think it's a loss. And I think sometimes it comes as a surprise to some women, but also many of the people who surround them. So if someone is able to parent, you know, and become a foster parent or through adoption or through a surrogate, many people who surround the woman think now you really have what you wanted. And in many ways, yes, a woman does have a child to parent, but on so many levels, that's not exactly what and who she wanted. And so the process of adjustment and acclimation can take significantly longer sometimes than the process to parenthood.
Well, yeah, I mean, what we try to tell people oftentimes is that there are many losses associated with infertility. The loss of having a genetic connection to your child, the loss of experiencing the physical aspects, the loss of an uncomplicated way of being able to reproduce, as well as the loss of the ability to parent. Non-genetic parenting only, surrogacy and adoption only take care, well, depending on how you become a parent through surrogacy, let's just say adoption, only takes care of the loss of the inability to parent. It doesn't deal with all the other losses. And if we don't acknowledge that those losses are there, they will find a way to raise their head in your parenting journey. And it doesn't reflect the love you feel for your child.
Right. And I think that it also, the relationship changes. If you don't talk about it, you know, there are sometimes women are holding lots of emotions that they're not feeling comfortable talking about, whether it's to their friends, family, husband. You know, it can be really difficult. You know, I remember going to a twin group and I was saying how difficult it was. And people were so mad at me that I was saying how difficult it was. Because I should have been thankful that I have twins, and they have twins, but I was complaining that it's so hard, and how dare I? So there's a lot of shame that can go along in many different ways, many different aspects of it.
And after the fact, after you, what you're raising is so true. After you finally get your long-awaited child, heaven forbid that you would, you know, complain.
Right.
You know, and that's another loss, and the inability to kvetch with your friends about the difficulty.
Really, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing you brought up that I was thankful is the feeling of guilt. That let's talk some about how guilt plays in. Let's see, Betty, go ahead.
Well, I think there's guilt in many, you know, many right from the beginning. You're not a real woman. You're not giving your husband, your partner, a baby. Guilt in parenting. Guilt in thinking, oh my God, I waited this long, and now it's really hard. And now I'm saying something. it's just latent, and motherhood in general, mothering twins. How do you give each kid the attention? So there's, you know, and everybody, and breastfeeding, and it goes on.
The inability to give your partner a child, we hear so often. When, of course, it's female, we hear it from women, and if it's male, we hear it from men.
Right.
And the feeling that, you know, you'd be better off. I mean, leave me, go find somebody else. Right. You know, that feeling.
Right. Younger person. Go get a, my husband should go get a younger woman.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That I'm only worth it if I am fertile.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And the guilt that, if especially if you have waited, the guilt that you have brought this on yourself. Joey, is that a common feeling as well?
Yes, these are themes that I hear with great regularity, and oftentimes I challenge the patients I'm working with in terms of a broader perspective, because oftentimes women will hone in on one factor. So for example, you know, their reproductive ability, saying again, I'm a failure to my partner. And I engage very directly with my patients saying, you know, when you decided to make a commitment to your partner, was it contingent on this one individual factor, saying, you know, we're going to have a contract that we're going to have two children by this time frame? That in general, you know, even though couples have, many of them have discussed their desire to focus on family growth at some point, there are many, many, many other qualities and factors that bring two people together. And I encourage people to have, you know, the pursuit of fertility or family growth be a part of their lives instead of becoming their lives. And I focus on that with regard to their relationship as well, saying fertility or family growth can be a part of your relationship. But I have yet to meet one couple who is not, who doesn't have additional reasons why they chose each other to be life partners.
Yeah, and I'm glad we were going to circle back to talk about some of the impacts of the stress of infertility on the couple, because it is real. Let me pause to let you know that this show is brought to you through the support of organizations that believe in our mission of providing unbiased, medically accurate information. And these are organizations that put their money behind their beliefs, and we truly thank them. One such organization is Cooper Surgical Fertility Genomic Solutions. They are global leaders in IVF and reproductive genetics. They offer PGTA, PGTM, PGTSR, and ERPSM. That's endometrial receptivity testing, both for individuals and couples. Cooper Genomics and Cooper Surgical is proud to provide comprehensive genetic counseling to their patients. And I will add that it is so important to have the genetic counseling to go along with the genetic testing. Another such organization is Cryos International Sperm and Egg Bank. They are dedicated to providing a wide selection of high quality, extensively screened, frozen donor sperm and egg, and they cover all races, ethnicities, and phenotypes, and they also can provide for both home insemination as well as fertility treatment. Cryos International is the world's largest sperm bank and the first freestanding independent egg bank in the United States. Another source of stress and anxiety is honestly, for a lot of people, some of the medical interventions. It's easy to kind of snicker a little at people who really dislike shots. But if you really dislike shots, it's a very real feeling. And, you know, you're screwed because there's a lot of shots as you progress through infertility treatment. So medical anxiety, how does that play out, Betty, in your experience?
Well, you know, there's for men, giving a sample in a clinic can be very traumatic, you know, or having sex on demand. We have to do that. That's a difficulty between the husband and the partners. I find a lot of anxiety. You know, if I'm 34 and when I turn 35, that's it. You know, there's that kind of
it's a cliff.
It's really, it's like at that, you're going to hit 35 and then it's going to be all over. And so people are really high anxiety through this whole process. And it's really hard to maintain a life, you know, the anxiety about giving yourself shots, about how many doctor's appointments am I going to go to? How do I get out of work? I'm a teacher. I can't get out of work. And somebody's going to find out. It's laden with anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, such a good point about just the sheer number of how do you fit these appointments into your work life. That's a real issue. That's another.
And also this is Joey, just adding on to this, excuse me to interrupt, but also the lack of predictability, that if someone is going in for a baseline ultrasound or a blood draw on day 3 of her cycle, that tends to be something that's anticipated. But as someone is going through a stim, preparing for a retrieval, it's very difficult to plan because everyone's body is literally different.
Yes. And yet our works demand a certain amount of predictability because we need to ask for time off. Yeah.
And so coverage.
Yeah, exactly. And who's going to cover for me during this time? Yeah. You know, and like it or not, I always say this, that in most discussions about infertility, we have to bring up money. And that is another source of great anxiety for not everyone. Some people have the money and it's simply not an issue, or they've got good insurance coverage. And that's certainly our goal, to get all couples there. But until then, how the heck do you pay for it? Betty, let's talk about the numbers aspect, the money aspect.
You know, people take out mortgages on their house. They borrow money from their parents. They're just, they go in debt to have a baby, because mm-hmm. it's so difficult to think about living life without doing this. You know, how could they not try? Big anxiety. And hopefully we'll have more states that are mandated fertility coverage on insurance. I mean, that would be really wonderful.
Yes. Yes. We are working to help promote that. You know, Resolve is certainly doing a lot along those lines as well. That is certainly our goal. So there's so many different aspects of stress and grief and loss in the whole infertility journey in general. And in many ways, I think that the stress of infertility is unique. I'm sure there are other, that, you know, all pain is, you know, all unhappy families are unique, or, and all, you know, so I'm sure that it could be said that there are definitely other forms of stressing that people go through that has its own unique characteristics. But let's just talk about some of the ways that the infertility stress and losses are unique to other stresses. Joey?
I think that, again, as women go through this, it quickly becomes apparent that that infertility is more than a full-time job, that it is every single second of every single hour of every single day, including evenings, weekends, and holidays, that many of these women have decided that they wanted a baby a long time ago and may have changed things like their diet, you know, thinking, I'm not going to have that glass of wine or those few glasses of wine, or I'm not going to have soft cheese, or I'm not, you know, in anticipation of having a child. And so in terms of how they're living, sleeping, eating, breathing, their focus is on conception and pregnancy and having a baby. And so monitoring their cycles, you know, if they use the washroom, you know, is there any discharge? Am I looking for, you know, mucus today? Have I started bleeding? And so again, there's no off button. And so going back in the podcast, just a moment when you had talked before about some of the differences between men and women, or, you know, potentially making the suggestion that men have it harder, I would argue that the challenges are simply very different, that men do get to go to work, or, you know, get to have other distractions where they're not having to think on every single level 24/7. But in some ways that makes them more in the dark. And they're not only concerned about their desire for pregnancy, parenthood, but also likely being very concerned about their partners and not necessarily being able to do anything to necessarily help make this easier or better sometimes. So oftentimes partners feel an incredible sense of helplessness.
It also seems to me that part of the, we talked earlier about people not talking about their infertility, sometimes even with those very close to them in their family, but and very often not talking about it with friends. So that this allows, one of the ways it's unique is that it's being suffered in silence and in solitude. But even when women and men as well, even if those who are struggling with infertility share, there's so much misunderstanding and lack of, quite frankly, compassion that they face if they do share. Betty, I'm assuming you also have seen this.
Oh my goodness! I have been doing support groups for, I don't know, 8 or 9 years now, and the people continually tell me, we call it stupid things that people say. Yeah. And I'm always amazed at how many things it's mind-boggling how people will, what they will say to people, and without even thinking that perhaps that might hurt somebody. So, you know, it's about being able to, puts people back in the closet that they don't want to talk. So from something benign, like when are you having a baby, can hit somebody really hard when they're right in the middle of all their treatments. Or somebody had twins, and some person said, well, maybe that they can give you one of the babies.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to understand. So it's
the one that really gets me the most, and I think that it is so common. Maybe this is maybe you weren't meant to be a mother.
Right.
Pardon?
It's God's plan.
Yeah, it's God's plan. You know, but you know, not everybody. Or you could be a good aunt. You know, I mean, we just hear it so often.
discounting somebody's feelings, saying that, oh, or I'll let you know, why don't you take my kids, which is really ugh.
Or this is, you know, another gem. It could be worse. You could, you know, have lost a child. And it's like we're in the pain Olympics that we are going to. Yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah. And that drives, as you say, people back into the closet. Right. It makes it, when they share, which can be good for them, on an emotional level, so other people know and can support them, they have to anticipate that they're not always going, it's not always going to be understood.
Right.
So they have to make that choice. And that's a tough choice to make.
Yeah, because you're depending on these people who you think are friends, and it's terrible for somebody when they say something somebody who's a really good friend, and it gets, the comment they get back just doesn't sit well. That's a real hurt to the friendship and where she is in her life.
Yeah. And it is not uncommon for people for a number of reasons to end up shifting friend sets, partly because as I think it was Joey, your other friends are all now parents, and quite frankly, you do have less in common,
right,
and less flexibility and things such as that. And their interests have shifted, so you've lost that, but also loss of friendships based on your friend's inability to understand what you're going through.
Right.
Yeah, that's a hard one. We've talked about, talked around this, but often it is a couple that is going through the infertility together. And the reality is, the couple is the infertile entity in a sense, because it doesn't really matter if it's the man or the woman. It's the couple that is not able to get pregnant. And yet it is not at all uncommon for couples to grieve separately and cope with the stress of infertility differently. And as much as I hate the, you know, men are from Mars and women are from Venus, or maybe it's the reverse. But I, you know, of the overgeneralizations about gender types, I do think that there are probably some generalizations that we can make. Joey, in your experience, in your practice, how do men and women cope with the stress and process the stress of infertility differently?
I definitely think that there are gender differences that quickly become apparent to any couple. But I also think that that's true no matter which two people we take a sample size of. If we're looking at two women going through fertility treatments, that we all deal with things differently, whether that's grief, whether that's loss, whether that's stress. Mm-hmm. In general, I find that women do tend to be more outwardly visible with their grief reactions or with their stress reactions, ideally wanting to be able to talk more frequently for longer periods of time and to express more of those emotions, assuming that they have a safe place, you know, to be able to have some of those conversations. In general, men tend to be a bit more concrete and tend to focus on the moment in terms of, if there's nothing I can do right now in this moment, I'm going to lean into work or focus on something where I can feel needed and productive. And again, that's just in general, but I do think that communication is one of the keys here for couples, but also for women who are interfacing with their support networks to be able to, and this goes back just a few minutes, to be able to help empower women and patients to say, I'm looking to just have you listen right now and not give me unsolicited advice or commentary or what happened to your friend's neighbor who had a success story. It's most helpful just to listen. And I think in between, or, you know, interpersonally as well with the couple, to say, I need more privacy, or I need to be at home, or I need to be more social, or it's more helpful for me to be distracted at work. That instead of making judgments or assessments, it's working to better accept some of these inevitable differences. It doesn't mean that one is struggling more or less. It simply means that we have different reactions.
And yes, and it doesn't necessarily, it's not necessarily indicative of the degree of grief that your partner, male or female, is experiencing. But I also think that those of us who process through talking need to understand that perhaps our partner shouldn't be the only one we are processing with. That's a burden that in and of itself that we're dumping on our partner.
You know, I talk to my clients about the 20-minute rule, which is when you walk in the door, when your husband walks in the door or your partner walks in the door, that you don't bombard them and you set aside a certain amount of time that you're going to talk fertility. And that may, I just call it 20 minute, but maybe it's an hour for the couple, who knows, it's whatever feels right for them, so that they talk about it and then they can move on to other aspects of their relationship.
You know, I'm that's a great segue, because I wanted to talk about the impact of infertility on relationships. And in this case, I mean the marital or the romantic relationship. We've talked some about how it can impact friendships. But it's hard. Yeah, if all of a sudden your life becomes infertility, and that's the only thing you talk about, it makes it tough. On the other hand, it's hard, because if that's first and in the forefront of your mind, I mean, that's tough advice, Joey. I'm thinking, I don't know, what would you suggest at that point? I mean, that's all the woman says, that's all I can think about.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. And just to clarify, when I'm talking about communicating, I'm not, certainly not suggesting talking about fertility 24/7. Betty, I think your idea is great. And I likewise, you know, counsel my patients. I'm simply suggesting when we do talk about fertility, that we talk about it and mean what we say and say what we mean. So instead of holding grudges because someone needs or wants to be more social, it's working to better accept, my partner might need to go out with friends if it's more helpful for me to stay back behind. But I think the reminder here is that we are all multidimensional women and human beings. And so it's being able to access other parts of ourselves, even if they don't feel as important or as pressing as the fertility piece, because ultimately with regard to pregnancy or parenthood, or if unfortunately, no, either way, there's going to be more loss if this time is not used wisely, and that if it's exclusively focused on fertility, there's going to be even more grief down the road. And in the event there is a pregnancy, that will be important to model as a parent, that it's not just one interest, that there are other interests and activities, even if they're not embraced with the same excitement, they can still be practiced with regularity.
Yeah. And one of you had mentioned it, I think it was you, Joey, at the beginning. Another impact, a very common impact of infertility on a marriage or a couple, is the impact on their intimacy, on their sex life. And it is so seldom talked about. People will even joke about it and say, oh, you must be having fun trying. And you think, you clearly have never had to try. If you think that it is fun, you know, it's fun the first month. That's not true. As long as you are thinking that it's going to happen anytime now, yeah, that could be fun. But once those thoughts are gone, it's tough, and it's tough to have sex on demand. And it's very common to have sexual dysfunction, male and female, right, through this. And also just wanting nothing to do with sex, because sex is
not fun anymore.
It's not fun. And it's also associated with failure.
Right. Right.
You know, and also just, you know, focusing on the exhaustion factor, you know, when someone is undergoing fertility treatments and maybe doesn't feel terribly sexy or like herself, but also just give them the emotional exhaustion and the cumulative toll, depending on how long this process takes.
Okay. So what is often suggested, and we're going to talk about coping techniques in a bit, but it's often suggested that taking time off from infertility for a while, so that you can fall back in love. Remember why you married this person or why you're partnered with this person to begin with, and to take the pressure off so that hopefully some of the joy that you have experienced in the past with your intimate relationship would come back. But that flies in the face of everything you're hearing constantly, which is, you know, time is not on your side. You know, we jokingly talked about 35 being a cliff, but, you know, and in fact, of course, it really isn't a cliff. It's more of a slow decline, but declining nonetheless. So how do we reconcile the fact that, yeah, our sex life might improve and our relationship might improve if we take a break, but, you know, time's not on our side. We're not getting any younger. Thoughts on that one, Betty?
Yeah, I think that depends on the age of the woman. And I think it depends on her conversation that she has with her doctor. And if the doctor says, you know, if you take two months off, it's not going to change your fertility. So yeah, go ahead and do it. So I think it depends on, sometimes there's women who say, I can't stop, because if I stop doing something, I'm going to feel like I'm doing nothing. And that's about working with them to be able to, you know, see what's realistic and what's not realistic. Because sometimes it's just that doing is really important for them. And what else can they do? How do they build resiliency? That's, I think it's really important to talk about, you know, what can they do to make it through this marathon? Because it's oftentimes a marathon and not a sprint. And how to be able to keep your energy up as a couple and as an individual, each one.
Mm-hmm. And that goes back to what Joey was saying, which is communicating with your partner for being able to say what you need, but also being able to listen to what she or he needs, and then compromise and figure out a way. Ultimately, you want to end this however it ends with each other still. Mm-hmm. So keeping that in mind, that it often takes give and take. I think, Joey, at the beginning, you mentioned something about cultural differences and how we don't think of fertility in general and oftentimes in cultural sense. We think of, you know, and we do know that infertility is it hits irrespective of your race or your culture. Although I do think there are differences, I think there are cultures who do perhaps make it either easier or harder to be infertile. Some thoughts on that one, Joey?
Yes, I do think that infertility can cross all cultural lines and also all socioeconomic lines. You know, there is not a face to infertility. There are many, many, many faces and situations. And I think independent of, you know, a woman's unique situation, she is a part of a community at large and a part of, you know, a family, a community, a society, and the world. And many women do define themselves by motherhood and something so basic as procreating, right, is something that we see all the time. And so for women to constantly not, you know, be flooded with visuals of pregnant women, pregnant animals. I had a conversation with a patient who was going through years and years of infertility and decided to take a break and go whitewater rafting with her husband. And she was so distracted because she kept seeing these dragonflies mate above her raft and was disgusted by it, thinking, you know, just can't get away from this. Yeah. On so many different levels, this is something that surrounds women, and they're not able to always block that visual.
Yeah, go ahead, Betty.
And I think in the there are a couple of the cultures that come to mind. One is the Orthodox Jewish community, where family is so, having children is so central. I've worked with a lot of Orthodox women who are bereft that they're going through this, and there's a lot of proscription about what they can do and they can't do. I think that that community has a lot of difficulty with infertility based on what the rabbis say they can do or they can't do. And I'm new to Florida, and I find that the Latin cultures, which I had not had a lot of experience with in New Jersey, but I find that the Latin cultures are also very quiet about what's happening for them. It's hard, men particularly, they don't want to talk about it. And the women too have a really hard time coming out and actually admitting that they're going through something with girlfriends.
Excuse me, just to add on to that, I also want to add the element of religion, that there are some cultures and some religions where fertility treatments are more supported, understood, and permissible than others. And so for many people, there are cultural limitations and additional stress layers and levels on top of this, but also potentially from a religious standpoint, where if a woman or a couple decides to proceed and may have a very strong faith base, may feel an additional layer of guilt. Mm-hmm. And or grief.
And go forward.
Yeah, and secrecy.
Right.
That they do decide to go forward. And right. And I would throw out also certain cultures and religions where really large families are the norm, that the inability to conceive makes you feel like you are standing out even all the more.
Or less than.
Mm-hmm. And are less than, exactly. And, you know, I will, we did a show a couple of years ago on infertility in the African-American community. And one of the comments, I think, or we received from one of our audience members was that as a Black woman, she said, you know, that the joke is, in the societal joke is that Black men are hyper-sterile and Black women are hyper-fertile. Not sterile, hyper, both Black men and women are hyper-fertile. And so to be suffering with infertility is flying in the face of what is a stereotype and actually a very, you know, negative stereotype to begin with. But it's still one that they're flying in the face of. And it's almost as if people were saying, if you're Black, you can't be infertile. When in fact that is absolutely not the case.
Yeah,
and it makes it harder for Black women and Black men to be facing infertility, I think. Yeah. Yes, and before we leave religion, there are certainly some religions that have a more dogmatic approach to that you are being punished by your infertility is deserved, right? Because that's how God works in that religion, and I think those people really struggle as well.
Yeah, totally.
The erosion of self-esteem and self-confidence and identity, you know, just continues in many ways.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so now we've talked a lot about all the ways that infertility is hard. Let's talk about ways, techniques that people can use for coping. They are infertile and they want to get through this with their mental health intact, and hopefully with a child, but there aren't guarantees. So let's talk about some coping techniques that couples and women and men can employ. Let's start with you, Betty.
Well, I think what most of the clients that I see, their coping mechanism is getting research. And unfortunately, I find that a lot of times they're not going to places, you know, reputable places to get research. And they're, you know, going to start a pineapple core diet soon because they read that pineapple cores help their fertility. Good research is great if you're going to the places that we know that there's good information.
Let me just add that creating a family exists. That's really was why we founded way back in 2007. That was the core of why we began,
right?
Was as a place for medically accurate information, because I couldn't agree with you more that a wonderful coping technique is getting information. Information is power.
Right.
So I interrupted, so keep talking, but I just wanted to.
And then there's other, you know, what can you do? So there's, you know, there's some information about acupuncture. There is some information about changing diets. There is information about, you know, one of the things that I think helps people is getting out of themselves, meaning, is there something you can do to volunteer? Usually we know that women and men stop doing the things that they like the most as they're going through fertility because there's just not enough time in the day. And I always recommend if they can bring some joy back into their life, something that they've dropped, you know, they're no longer scrapbooking, they're no longer going to the movies, whatever it is, distraction is a wonderful coping strategy. You know, yeah. Watching silly movies or something where they can laugh. You know, it's almost an hour by hour. How can you cope? What are you going to do this hour to be able to keep yourself level-headed and to take care of yourself? And so there's, you know, many, find a support group, find a therapist, do something that, meditate, listen to music. There's all kinds of things that find what makes you, gives you a little bit of happiness during this long, difficult journey.
Okay, excellent. Bring joy back. I love that. Yeah. Okay, Joey, some other thoughts on things that people can do to cope with the many stresses of infertility.
I think it can be helpful to identify and or confirm your support group. So if historically leaning into your best friend and having long phone conversations or text exchanges was really helpful, and your best friend is pregnant, she may or may not be the person who is going to be one of your greatest supports right now. And that may be the case, but I think it might be some reorganizations of friendships in terms of who is going to truly be the most supportive and or available. And it's sometimes giving women permission to step back a bit from some friendships that may not be as reciprocal during this time. And this is very challenging because, again, many people feel isolated already as they're going through this. And I'm not suggesting getting rid of all of your friends or family members, but instead being very selective and discretionary about who those truest supports really are. And again, really locking them into place. And it may be proactively saying, my husband and I are anticipating, you know, that this is not going to be as straightforward. Maybe sharing some information with a trusted source doesn't mean you have to disclose everything. But I think really, again, identifying and or confirming or clarifying who those true supports are going to be to have that team in place around you
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's, and giving your, I will rephrase what you said a slightly different way, but because I really liked it. It's okay to be self-protective.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And this is Betty. And speaking of self-protection, we're coming up to the holiday season. And I think this is a time to really be self-protective. You know, there's, you know, during the year, we have lots of baby showers, which I always tell people, if you don't want to go, don't go. Take care of yourself. But in the holidays, which is always about kids, right? Christmas and Hanukkah and all that. So work with your partner, work with your partner and decide what can you attend? What can you not attend? Should you take a trip this time, not be there for Christmas? What is it that you can do that you can take care of yourself as we get to the holiday season? How to sneak out politely, show up late and leave early.
This is Joey again. I think also gently challenging some historic traditions and expectation that if every single year it's been 30 or 40 family members, a woman's social anxiety might be too high to comfortably be able to attend or participate. And so it may be deciding we will see family for Thanksgiving, but we won't for other celebrations. That again, it's being very, very selective, discretionary, assertive, but also really self-focused on what's going to be most helpful for the woman when she's got depleted reserves and limited reserves that she's going to need for the rest of this journey.
One of the very creative solutions, a couple in our support group, both were in the medical profession, and they decided that over the holidays, and let me just throw out that Thanksgiving is also stressful because you know, the talk tends to be very focused on children and grandchildren at the table. And then, you know, other holidays such as Halloween. Oh my gosh, your Facebook feed is going to be full of you know, princesses and superheroes. And even Easter we hear about. And then, of course, Mother's Day and Father's Day and things like that. Anyway, this couple, as I said, were both in the medical profession. And what they did was they decided that they needed to just not be, or that it was just going to be too stressful. So they both volunteered, and they were extremely popular, as you might imagine, because they're always looking for volunteers to work over the holiday, and it was the perfect excuse. And then when they said the added benefit was, and it took them a couple of years to successfully become parents. And when they were parents, they didn't work a holiday for a long time because they had already paid in advance. And so I thought that was amazingly creative. And, you know, there's a lot of organizations, homeless shelters, soup kitchens, things like that, that they really struggle to find volunteers over the holidays. So just a thought as well.
Yes.
Of what people can do, you know, to be proactive for the holidays. And the one thing I would also add is sit down and assess what about the holidays bring you joy, and don't let infertility steal that from you. You know, if it is getting together with, you know, seeing your siblings, well then go out to dinner with them without their kids. If indeed the presence of your nieces and nephews is stressful for you, or getting together with your parents, you know, is find a way to incorporate that, or maybe it's midnight mass or whatever. Incorporate the parts of the holidays that bring you joy, and don't let that go in your unless you absolutely have to, because it's the only way you can self-protect.
Yeah. That's a great idea.
All right. So we've talked about some of the coping techniques, but we should certainly mention that therapy is a very effective coping technique. How would people go about finding a therapist that specializes or at least understands the infertility and the complications that infertility can add? Betty?
I think that going to ASRM, the American Society of Reproductive Medicine, and looking up a professional is a great way to find somebody who is steeped in the knowledge of infertility. You can there's also other registries where you can go online and you look up by category. You could say somebody who's interested in somebody who's well-versed in infertility. And I do think that that's often one of those frustrations for women going through for infertility is when they have a therapist who doesn't understand all the terms. There's so much medical jargon. And if she's sitting across from somebody that says, tell me what an IUI is, tell me what does that mean? You know, it takes the air out of being able to just talk and have somebody really understand. So I think it's really important to find somebody who gets what you're talking about.
And I'll say that one way, there is a list of mental health professionals. There's a mental health professional committee. I think it's called a committee at ASRM. And so those members is a great source. But, you know, honestly, even if you aren't at a clinic, calling your clinic and asking who they may have a counselor. And if they don't, chances are good they can recommend one.
Yeah.
Joey, what questions, if you're looking for a therapist, what questions should you ask to help you winnow out those that have more or versus less experience in, I guess you're winnowing out, so it would be less experience in infertility?
You know, I think this is a really important point to focus on, because we are very lucky that with, you know, ASRM, but also with the National Resolve Organization, that many people are able to access a specific and well-experienced mental health provider. But there are many, many, many areas still, unfortunately, where there is not a specialized provider. And so I think it is wonderful if a patient can ask somebody who is well-versed and has the knowledge and experience. But I also think from a personality standpoint, there are many therapists who are well-versed in women's mental health issues who can focus on some of the challenges of depression or anxiety, navigating couples communication. And so I think being able to say when someone presents for therapy, this is not just infertility that I'm dealing with, but are you well-versed to help me, you know, well-versed and equipped to help me focus on marital communication, you know, relationships in general, and navigating a lot of social anxiety as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think those are, you're right. It doesn't absolutely have to be a counselor that exclusively, focuses on it. Yeah. Let me remind everyone that this show is underwritten with the support of Ferring Pharmaceutical. They want you to know, and this is totally relevant to the topic that we're talking about today, there is an app out there called Ferticom. It is an app that was developed by Dr. Ali Domar and Dr. Liz Will, who are both reproductive psychologists. And it is designed to help women cope with the many daily challenging emotional situations that arrive when you are struggling with infertility. You can get more information about the Ferticom app and actually download it at the website ferticomapp.com. That's ferticalmapp.com. And let me also mention that the app is free, and it's so it is, at least now, at least this year, it is free. So we recommend that you get over there as quickly as possible and get it while it still is free.
And also, Dawn, can I just include that there's also for males, there's Ferti Strong.
Absolutely, right? Yeah.
And for men, for women can give it to their husbands if they're not listening in, to let them know that there is a place to go for information.
Yes, thank you for saying that. And in fact, I'm going to add that in my experience from talking with people, most of the men are finding the Fertistrong app through their women. And that, of course, is not surprising in the least, now is it? All right, thank you so much for being with us today to talk to about this really important topic, you know, coping with the stress. We thank you, Betty Galen and Joey Miller, for being here. Joey, if people want more information about you, where would they get it?
Perhaps the easiest way is through my website. It's www.joeymillermsw.com. joeymillers.com. That's joeymillermsw.com.
Perfect. And Betty Galen, if people want more information about you and your private practice, how would they get it?
And that's on my website, www.betty, which is B-E-T-T-E, Galen, G-A-L-E-N, MSWLCSW.com.
And let me remind everyone, the views expressed in this show are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of Creating a Family, our partners, or our underwriters. Keep in mind that the information given in this interview is general advice. To understand about how it applies to your specific situation, you need to work with your infertility professional. Thank you guys for being here today, and I will see you all next week.